Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of my Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and I am here today by myself. We're kind of on a weird schedule this week. We recorded an interview with Joni Jenkins on Monday, which we will listen to after I've finished here talking about the primary results, which happened on Tuesday, and that's what we have to do today for the show. Well, we're going to talk about the primary results and then talk to Joni Jenkins. Thanks for accommodating us. Jasmine's not with me today, and she's actually going to be gone for a couple of weeks, so get ready. I don't know what we're going to do yet, but we'll do something cool, I promise. So without any further ado, let's talk about Kentucky's 2018 primary election. So this Tuesday, about 23% of Kentucky's registered voters turned out to vote in a midterm primary. That's not a lot of people, of course, but that's not too unexpected for a year like this year. Doesn't excuse anybody. If you didn't go vote, shame on you. Try harder next time. But regardless, this Tuesday, 23% of Kentucky's registered voters turned out to vote. In the headline race, Lieutenant Colonel Amy McGrath defeated Lexington Mayor Jim Gray in the primary for the District 6 United States Congressional seat. Lieutenant Colonel McGrath won every single county outside of Fayette in order to win by a total of about 8%, which I was impressed by. I was surprised by that. I thought Jim Gray would probably win, to be honest with you, but that's why I didn't predict it ahead of time, because I didn't know what might happen. But yes, Lieutenant Colonel McGrath won, and she won pretty convincingly. 8% in a race that big is pretty serious. Interestingly, in that race, Democrats cast more than 75% of all the votes in the Kentucky 6th primary, which that's pretty crazy. Now, Andy Barr didn't have much opposition, just basically nominal opposition, but that's still pretty impressive that 75% of the votes in that seat were for Democrats as opposed to Republicans. Of course, we also had primary elections for the State House of Representatives, and in that chamber, three incumbent Republicans actually lost their seats, which is that's unusual to see a number like that. Three members from the same party, four in total. But the three incumbent Republicans who lost were Tim Couch, who served from Leslie County in eastern Kentucky since about 2003. C. Wesley Morgan, who we've talked about several times on the show. We interviewed the Democrat running in that seat, Morgan Eves. But yeah, C. Wesley Morgan, the Madisonville Republican representative that we've talked about so much, he lost his primary election. And also the majority floor leader, Jonathan Schell. This was the big shocker of the night, in my opinion. Jonathan Schell, he was the main recruiter of candidates in 2016. He helped to build the bench of candidates that led the GOP takeover of the House. But, you know, he was also a major architect of the GOP's pension/sewer plan. And it looks like that came back to get him. The person he ran against, the person who defeated him in the primary, was a teacher. There you go. You know, he went down in the primary, which was very surprising. One incumbent Democrat also lost their House seat last night as well. Dennis Horlander, who has served the South Central Jefferson County District just east of Shively since about 1997. He lost to a woman named Nima Kulkarni, who is an immigration lawyer and Emerge alum. So Emerge came out strong. They ran a good candidate. Ms. Kulkarni actually just absolutely cleaned up in that race. It wasn't really even close. She won almost every precinct in defeating incumbent Dennis Horlander. But in addition to Ms. Kulkarni, Dr. Lisa Wilner defeated Richard Becker and Jack Walker in the closely watched race to replace Jim Wayne in Central Jefferson County in that seat too, the 35th. And also, Patty Minter defeated four other candidates in the 20th District in Bowling Green to become the Democratic nominee there to replace Jody Richards in that seat. So, you know, those three, Nina Kulkarni, Patty Minter, and Dr. Lisa Wilner, those three combined with the Amy McGrath result, I think it was a good day to be a woman seeking office in Kentucky as a Democrat, with the slight exception of Patty Piot, who was upset in her bid to become the Democratic nominee in the 4th United States Congressional District. That was quite surprising. But other than that, women really carried the day. My wife actually was running around the house yesterday during election returns saying, it's the year of the woman. So there you go. There were a number of actually very close races that happened in the primary yesterday as well. In the 4th House District in Western Kentucky, incumbent Lynn Beckler won the nomination by 179 votes. It looked like he was going to lose most of the night, but managed to pull it out there at the last second. In the 43rd District GOP primary, which basically is just selecting who will be the sacrificial lamb to the this district, which is mostly made up of voters in the west end of Louisville, some in the east end as well. But Everett Corley won by a scant 9-vote margin. That's the smallest margin of the night. And then in the 100th District in Ashland, This for the Democratic primary in the 100th district, this was a very close and very serious race, but Terry Clark ended up defeating Ann Perkins by 16 total votes. Two women running in that race to replace Kevin Sinnett, who'd been a representative there for quite a long time. So yeah, we were going to get, if one of those comes through, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this came down to absentee ballots. I don't know if there's a McCown yet or not. I don't know if that could potentially flip, but either one of those women will be running to replace Representative Kevin Sinnett. In local races that we've been talking about, Linda Gorton and Ronnie Bastin advanced through the Lexington mayoral primary. So they will run against each other to become the mayor of Lexington this year. And Greg Fisher, the mayor of Louisville, he had a primary challenger in Ryan Finbeck, but managed to win in a huge landslide over him. So he came out very, very strong. But again, the number of votes cast in some of these races was kind of surprising. Ryan Finwick, I think he ended up with just north of 20% of the total vote for mayor in Louisville, but still managed to get more votes than Vicki Yates Brown Glisson, who is running against John Yarmuth now in her primary, in the Republican primary in Louisville. So, you know, pretty surprising. Maybe not surprising that there's more Democratic votes in Louisville, but the amount more was surprising to me. And then the last local race we wanted to highlight is that David Ermold, who raised more than $200,000 in his bid to become the Rowan County clerk, he lost in the Democratic primary to Elwood Caudill. So this race is notable because it's to run against Kim Davis, who is now a Republican in Moorhead in the Rowan County Clerk's Office. And David Ermold had been refused a marriage certificate. He's gay. This was, of course, a huge national story. You probably remember it. But he was running and raised more than $200,000 nationally to become the Rowan County Clerk, but lost to Mr. Caudill. Mr. Caudill has actually run for this office before. He ran against Davis when she was a Democrat in 2014, and he only actually came within 23 votes of unseating her in the 2014 primary before he was defeated. So Mr. Ermold, who is maybe more well-known nationally and had an impressive story, something that really people latched onto nationally, he lost to the probably more well-known local candidate there in Rowan County. Today is Wednesday, the 23rd, when I'm recording this, and we are actually just receiving news that a candidate who won in a primary, got the most votes in a primary to be a judge in Louisville, Danny Alvarez, actually passed away tonight. I didn't know Mr. Alvarez. I think Jasmine did. But everybody I know that knew that man said that he was an incredible person. He was an immigration lawyer here in town. He'd run for judge before. Pretty well-known and well-respected man. It's very tragic. Our hearts are going out to his family and his friends tonight. So that's the primary for 2018 in Kentucky. Of course, we will be discussing the fallout in the weeks to come. But without any further ado, let's listen to our interview with Joni Jenkins. Representative Joni Jenkins is a member of the Kentucky House of Representatives from Shively and Jefferson County. She served District 44 since 1995. She visited us at the end of the last session after she had been named to the Adoption Task Force. She was one of the sponsors of House Bill 1, which was a product of that task force and which passed in the most recent legislative session. We've invited her to talk about this year's legislative session. So Representative Joni Jenkins, welcome to my old Kentucky podcast.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I guess welcome back. So yeah, we have a second time guest for the second time ever. We're really excited to have you. So this session was one of the most acrimonious in recent memories. You've been in the legislature since 1995. Can you remember a session when as many people showed up to demonstrate?
Oh my gosh, no. You know, last year in 17, we saw a lot of union folks come and protest, but boy, this year, teachers and working folks, and it was pretty amazing. It was breathtaking to walk out into the rotunda and see democracy in action.
Right, and I mean, so you've been on the scene since 1995, like we mentioned. There's been like several major scandals that have happened since then, since it's Kentucky. I mean, you arrived in Frankfort, I guess, like in the middle of Operation Bop Trap that was like going on, I guess, when you got there.
It had really already finished, and I think there was a huge turnover in the House. I think I was one of 17 elected that year.
Wow.
So
okay.
It was kind of post-Bop Trot.
Right. And then there was like Paul Patton a few years later,
right,
with Tina Connors, and then Ernie Fletcher with the merit system and many more.
Right.
You said, you know, there's that many people that have been out there demonstrating. But I mean, just in terms of how frustrated people are with the legislature, do you think that there's ever been a particular time when people have been more angry?
You know, I think it's kind of a lot of things coming together. I think there were a lot of people that were real upset over the 16 elections nationally. So I think there was that level of frustration. there was the frustration of the 17 session where we saw so many working folks' rights taken away. And then we have a governor who, let's say, is not very discreet in the things he says.
Right. So
he was kind of throwing gasoline on that fire. And, you know, there were... You know, I think there's a big buildup to this session because we were told that we were going to have a special session on pensions and tax reform for like the 6 months prior to it, which, of course, we did not go into. So I think that all just kept that level of awareness among folks that are on state pensions, state workers and teachers. So I think there was a big buildup. Then, of course, we had the situation of the Speaker of the House.
Right.
I guess we'll go down in history as the shortest serving Speaker of the House, had a scandal and resigned, then didn't resign, and then did resign. And we actually operated the entire time without a official Speaker of the House. We had a presiding officer and the Speaker pro tem.
Right, and there's a lawsuit about that, I believe.
Right, so, and that's pretty interesting as well. So this new majority, the Republicans, were operating with a four-person leadership as opposed to a five, and all four of them did not have a whole lot of experience.
Right. Yeah, that's certainly something that I've thought about, that the Republicans really lacked, and that Jeff Hoover was a very good legislator. I mean, in terms of being mm-hmm. able to like push things across mm-hmm. the finish line, and that's something that really seemed like it was lacking
right,
this season.
Right, right. You know, certainly Representative Hoover and I don't agree on a whole lot of things politically.
Right.
But he is a fine and talented legislator.
Right. Well, one of the big questions I think everybody that has about all the things that have gone down in Frankfort this year is what's it going to matter? By the time that everybody listens to this, the elections will already have taken place in the primaries. But, you know, do you feel like that this is going to carry over to November? What are your expectations around how this will carry forward into actually electing new people into office?
You know, I think we're all looking at tomorrow's primaries, which I guess this will be playing afterwards.
Right,
so
right.
I'm not going to make any predictions because I'll probably be wrong. I think we're looking at how our incumbent Republicans, we understand there are a few of them that have really tight primaries. So uh-huh. that's going to be interesting. We're looking at turnout. The Secretary of State, Allison Grimes, has predicted a 30% turnout, which would be historic, which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sad. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think... I just had my Breakfast of Champions, which I do every Saturday before election, and the folks that helped me said, you know, what do you think about the turnout? And I thought, well, there's not a lot interesting on the ballot mm-hmm. in my district this time. I don't have a primary. But we had a huge crowd, mm-hmm. and folks were energetic and angry in uh-huh. some ways. So I don't know. I think we could see real change happening. We certainly have, you know, historic levels of people running, mm-hmm. lots of women, lots of educators, lots of younger folks. So it's very exciting to watch, and, you know, and I hope come November there are some changes. You know, I certainly would like to see the Democrats take back the majority, but I do think it's going to be a real different legislature in 19.
Absolutely. Okay, so when the legislature wasn't making sweeping changes to the pension system or enacting like 6.25% budget cuts, there was some legislation that passed, which you sponsored. So chief among the bills that you worked on this session was House Bill 1, which dealt with adoption. The bill was certainly a compromise, and it earned mm-hmm. the support of almost everybody in the entire legislature. So tell us a little bit what it was like working on a piece of legislation like this as a member of the minority caucus when the majority really didn't need any Democratic votes mm-hmm. to pass.
You know, the whole process, and the process started last year soon after I talked to you because I was named to co-chair that committee, and I have to give Speaker Hoover and Speaker Pro Tem Osborne credit because I really was an acting co-chair. I think there for a while I was the only Democrat in
Wow.
in the legislature that was chairing a meeting every other month. And Representative David Mead, who was the other co-chair, he and I worked very well together. I think a lot of our colleagues were wondering how that was going to work out because we are probably at extreme ends of the political spectrum. But we worked very well together. And I think we came up with, he gave in some and I gave in some. And I think we came in with a bill pretty much down the middle. It made some really good changes, I think. And one of the most important things I think House Bill 1 did was it created an interim committee, standing committee on child welfare, mm-hmm. which I just was named to the other day. that was quite a surprise. So I think as we look at the reforms, and there are some that, you know, some people have a little concern about, but I think because of this standing committee, it's those reforms we can be monitoring and make sure that what we intended is happening and can go back and tweak in 19 or 20. Any major reforms do sometimes need to be readjusted. Mm-hmm.
So the last time that you were here, we talked to you a little bit about this upcoming session and kind of how things are going to be different now mm-hmm. that you're a part of a minority caucus. And I guess you had been coming out of that, but you're getting used to it, right?
Yeah.
And you did actually sponsor three other bills this session that were passed through the legislature. I think one related to survivor benefits for police officers mm-hmm. and one related to guardianship of disabled adults and another about like revenge porn, that sort of mm-hmm. issue. And all these bills ended up passing with little to no opposition. So I'm kind of interested in how you're finding the work of passing bills now as a member of a minority caucus. I mean, you're clearly getting some things through.
It's a little different. I co-sponsored those bills. They had Republican right. uh-huh. sponsors, and I went to different Republicans and said, I've been working on this bill for about 5 years. Would you be interested in sponsoring it? Mm-hmm. And of course they would. All the hard work was done. Yeah. You learn different techniques. Mm-hmm. And as a member of the majority party before, when the Senate was controlled by a different party, you had to work across party lines in the House mm-hmm. or else they would just kill your bill once it got to the Senate. Mm-hmm. So those relationships had been there before,
right.
So it wasn't that difficult.
Well, and that's actually, that's a good follow-up here, is, you know, I'm looking across all the different types of ways that Democrats can be serving, and in mind with different primary races that are going on around mm-hmm. the state, and there kind of are, like, two different types of legislatures, some that, like you, are more willing to, like, you know, talk to Republicans, get them to sponsor your bills, make friends, figure out ways to compromise, and others that are more strident and, mm-hmm. and are willing to, you know, make a big, strong stand for something that they might believe in and, you know, don't really mind so much to make some people mad. So, I mean, how do you feel about those different styles? Do you think that, you know, there's a role for both types of people? Are you hoping that there's more of one or a different kind as the legislature turns over in the way that you're talking about next year?
Oh, I think both types are very essential to the process. You know, when you're in a minority, there are times when you do have to speak out and be the opposition. And there are times when you have to get along, you know. I spoke out very strongly against the president one day and got gaveled down by David Osborne. Never had been gaveled down before. I wasn't sure, do I sit down now or do I keep talking? What do you do? So, you know, we always say every group needs a bomb thrower, every group needs, you know, a negotiator. And all those folks are very essential, I think, to the process. In the last 2 years, I have spoken more on the floor of the House than I ever have before, because what we figured out very early as super minority is all we have is time. And if we can eat up time, it keeps the other party from passing other bad things.
So we've talked a little bit about this past session, but let's look ahead a little bit to next year's session. Are there any bills that you intend to pre-file this year or know that you will file in the 2019 session?
I had a couple bills from the last session that were not picked up at all, and I would really like to work a little bit harder on those to try to find some compromise on the other side. And one of them is about consistent scheduling for part-time folks. And it's not specifically for part-time folks, but fair scheduling, I think, is the term that other states have used. It's been passed in a few states. And as we move toward work requirements for SNAP benefits and health care benefits, we have to recognize that a lot of that population of low-income working folks are in jobs that don't have very consistent scheduling.
Right.
Retail workers, restaurant workers. Mm-hmm. And I'm very curious and concerned about how that's going to work as they maintain their eligibility for expanded Medicaid. You know, if you're a retail worker, you might have great hours right before the holidays, and then they're going to drop way off in January. Are we going to have people churning back and forth? So trying to bring awareness to that issue and some safety and stability for those workers.
Cool. So I think it's a really good point, thinking about how that will affect the work requirements. And, you know, not only is that a bill that is important for people that are working and gaining employment, it's important because of what might happen with their health care. Do you think that you'll sponsor any more foster care or adoption bills this coming year that take this year's reform even further?
Well, I think I'm real anxious for the committee to start its work and having folks come back and testify. I have heard a lot of concern from folks that work with people in recovery, because there is a piece of that, of House Bill 1, that talks about women who deliver babies who are addicted. And it's, you know, finding that balance between respecting the rights of biological parents, but keeping children safe. And I will tell you that Representative Mead and I were at very opposite ends of this, and we really did come to the middle on this one. I think my concerns are, is I am very, very much in favor of women getting treatment, and I'm afraid of putting up any barriers to women getting those treatments. I would rather use carrots than sticks in that. And I am a little concerned, and we're going to watch this, that we may have women who will not go to a hospital to deliver, knowing that that baby is, and that's a very dangerous thing for both the mother and child. So we, you know, I really want to talk to more people and see how we are doing in that, because that's an area, I hope I'm wrong, but that's an area I'm very, very concerned about.
I'd say that's definitely a concern that a lot of people had about the bill. Talking a little bit about a recent Supreme Court decision, so with the recent Supreme Court decision striking down the federal ban on sports betting, do you think that the legislature will have a sports gambling bill next session? And if so, what do you think that might look like?
You know, we had one last year that, just could not seem to get off the ground. It was sponsored by, you know, a Republican. From what I understand from Jason Bailey and the Kentucky Center on Economic Policy, there's really not a lot of revenue there. So I don't think anybody's going to be real excited about, you know, solving the pension problem with, you know, that. That is really way out of anything I've ever really dealt with. So I would think the bill might look a whole lot like, I can't remember the number of it that
one that was filed.
Representative Koenig had this last year. And I'm not sure why I don't think he could ever get the votes out of his caucus. And, you know, quite frankly, our caucus was like, we're not helping you, you know. So, you know, I anticipate there could be another push for casino gaming, just because the budget is so, so bad. And, you know, historic lows in funding for higher ed. We're at the very bottom nationally for higher ed. And as you're talking about trying to attract, you know, jobs and businesses here, that's not a great tactic.
All right. So finally, let's talk a little bit about elections. So tell us about any November races that you're interested in, that you're watching closely, or any candidates that you're particularly excited about.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm certainly interested in my own race this fall. I will probably devote a lot of time to that.
You don't have a primary opponent, but you do have a Republican opponent in the general race.
Yes,
right?
I do. Okay. I do. With the current situation with the state threatening to take over Louisville schools, JCPS, from my talks with people, not only in my district, but around the district, people are very, very concerned about that. And I think that could have a real adverse effect on some of the Republicans who are running. So we're looking at the Phil Moffitt seat very carefully. Yeah, we think that could be a pickup for us. The Kevin Bratcher seat, Ronnell Brown is running for that one. So generally, we tend to think that Jefferson County doesn't change much in party representation.
Sure.
But we do think that there could be the opportunity. And, gosh, there are a couple seats in Lexington that I think could flip. The Benvenuti seat, he's not running again. Really good primary candidates. I'm not sure who's going to come out of that one, but I think we'll have a really good candidate. And I think that Stan Lee seat is one. We have a great candidate there, and, gosh, I should know his name, and I'm sorry, but he's like a retired police attorney.
We had him on the show.
Josh Hicks.
It is Josh Hicks. He's great. Love that guy.
We've
had all the races that you mentioned on the show. We had all three candidates on the 88th. We had Josh Hicks. We had Ronnell. And we had Tina Bojanowski.
Great minds think alike. You know, we're hearing Western Kentucky is really activated now, and so we look, you know, there's some open seats there that we think look good for us. You know, we're concerned about protecting some of our incumbent seats, you know, with Jody Richard retiring. That's a seat that, you know, we're not sure how that could swing. You know, the Jim Wayne seat is going to be a Democrat. We're just not sure which one right now. We'll know Tuesday night.
Yeah, that's a race to watch in the
Louisville. That's a really, really interesting race. Dara Owens' seat, you know, looking at that one. Out west, Jarrett Watkins and Will Corsi, we're watching those seats pretty carefully. But, you know, at this point, I really do feel like the wind is at the back of the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
For change,
right.
It seems like. And, you know, I think the Republicans will always outfund us, more funded than us. But, gosh, we certainly do have a lot of citizens that are really, really activated and interested. So we're going to see, you know, is it going to be people or money, which is going to prevail.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming into the show and talking to us.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
Yeah. All right, Jasmine, how can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter at @myoldkypod. We have a Facebook page that you can like. We have a newsletter that you can subscribe to, which is
tinyletter.com/myoldkentuckynewsletter.
Yep. And we also have a Patreon, and you can support us with just $1 a month or more if you would like to, just to support us and our hosting fees and the work that we put into this podcast. And so you can find our Patreon page at patreon.com/myoldkentuckypodcast.
Awesome. Thank you for listening, everybody, and we will see you next week.